Hello, this is The Way, Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascazo. Today's discussion is about the second episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, streaming on Disney+. This podcast contains spoilers for the show and any films or content that Marvel Studios has released by the time the episode aired on March 26, 2021. If you're wary that speculation could alter your experience of other Marvel movies, shows, comics, this podcast might be better suited for listening after you're satisfied that you've caught up. You have been warned. Want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard? Well, send us your thoughts. Email to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or visit facebook.com/thewayphase4. It's more fun when you join in on the discussion. What's new this week? Well, there's no feedback. This episode is titled The Star-Spangled Man. It's said to be 50 minutes long if you look at the Disney Plus screen, but from opening shot to credits, I timed it, and there's little less than 42 minutes of showtime. The description in Disney Plus says, John Walker is named Captain America, and Sam and Bucky team up against a rebel group. Where we left off, well, the first episode establishes life isn't easy for anyone after coming back from what the Marvel Studios multiverse is calling the blip. And for Sam, it's his family having trouble with the family business, while Bucky is still getting over trauma from his former business as the Winter Soldier. He has been pardoned by the government, but not by himself, and he's trying to make amends. Sam learns of a worldwide threat from rebels thanks to his new military shadow, Taurus, and then both the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and the United States and the world, really, are introduced to a new Captain America, and it's not Steve, and it's not Sam.
Good morning, America!
So when you hit play, the Disney Plus Snap splash screen is followed by a previously on segment, and then we get to the show. Someone is unzipping a garment bag with what appears to be Captain America's uniform. It kind of also looks like you might be unzipping a body bag, though, so it's kind of a parallel there. And it kind of works well with the first episode where we saw Falcon, Sam, ironing his clothes. So in this one, we again see some clothes being looked after. And it's John Walker. He's looking at his new Captain America uniform. And it's apparent pretty quickly that he's in his old high school locker room, where he'll be getting introduced by Good Morning America in a few moments, and he kind of appears nervous. More nervous here in front of his hometown crowd than he was on the steps of a government office building when he was announced at the end of the last episode. We establish here that John Walker has an African-American wife and best friend. It's my impression that they come in very early, so at the very least we don't think he is a racist, though it's very probable that the people who gave him the mantle may be. Because they passed over Sam. His wife and friend both give him a pep talk, and he says it's time to go to work.
Time to go to work.
And then we are treated to the Marvel Studios logo open that we've seen in other shows like WandaVision and in the first episode of this one. It's a really fantastic version, though, with a marching band performance instead of the usual Marvel Studios anthem. And after the logo finishes, the music continues. It's a version of the Star-Spangled Man song that Steve Rogers warmed up to before going on stage to sell bonds during World War II and in Captain America the First Avenger. Here, the propaganda is very self-serving, though, because it's not to support a war effort, it's just to sell Walker as the new Captain America. He goes out to an interview where he's lobbed some softball questions. He does deflect some of the praise and seems to revere Steve Rogers, but, you know, this there's just something off. His resume is definitely very impressive. 3 Medal of Honors, worked in counterterrorism and hostage rescue. His body was studied at MIT, they say, which I think is important. He's tested off the charts in speed, endurance, intelligence, but he interrupts. He says he doesn't have super strength. I'm not 100% sure about that, but he says he doesn't. He says what he does have is guts, something that Steve Rogers had a lot of. And then we see that Bucky's been watching the show and does not appear pleased at all to see this interview. And something is off. Remember, we get to hear a little evidence of what that is when he talks about how he views Steve Rogers as a brother.
Steve Rogers was the kind of guy who could do that.
He gave me hope. So even though I never met him, feels like a brother.
Wow.
Sam then is in a hangar getting ready to depart for a mission, but he sees a propaganda poster for the new Cap. He doesn't appear pleased, but he's readying for a mission with Torres. Bucky's waiting for him downstairs, and it seems like this is the first time that they've seen each other since maybe Endgame, from what Sam seems to say. Bucky is upset that Sam turned down the mantle, but Sam doesn't see it that way. Apparently, Sam has had Red Wing doing reconnaissance, and he talks about the guys in Flag Smashers or the ones behind them being part of the Big Three.
What Big Three? Androids, aliens, and wizards.
Now, though that line is funny, it doesn't really encompass all the threats, especially since many of them have actually just been humans seeking power, unless he's only referring to the Avengers movies and not character movies. But Iron Man 1, 2, and 3, humans are the threats. And Spider-Man, Ant-Man, like Bucky says.
That's not a thing.
That's definitely a thing.
No, it's not.
It's not really clear how Bucky knew to be there, unless he was invited by Sam somehow, but they're both on the plane to Germany, and there's more tension, especially since in the scene before, Bucky's telling Sam he should have taken up the mantle, but now in this scene, he's drawing a comparison where he's telling Sam he's not like Steve, because Steve always had a plan. Well, Sam drops out of the ship when it's time and uses his wings, but when Bucky asks for a parachute, he's told he's too low to parachute in, so he says he doesn't need one, takes a cue from Captain America, and just jumps out of the plane, and he uses his vibranium arm to try to break his fall, and it's a little funny. I mean, he hits the earth. I don't know how these guys, even with super serum, are surviving these things, but that's what they're doing. We're treated to Sam's voice in his ear telling him he saw all that, he's got it on tape, and it's played for laughs. And then Bucky gives Sam a hard time for hanging back when he starts to sneak into a warehouse. You know, Bucky wants to charge in and fight. Sam wants to surveil first and use Red Wing to hang back and figure things out. The guys that are watching in the warehouse are definitely superpowered. They're lifting large containers with ease. And Sam says there might be a hostage as the group heads out on trucks. And this spurs a little heroism from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Even though they have no idea who this might be, they're going to run in. And now that there's a hostage, they're going to go and save them. So Bucky uses super speed to run down the truck. You know, Sam's got his wing, so he doesn't need that. Not the second one, though. The one in the lead, which may very well have been where the hostage appeared to be, but it certainly alerts the second truck to their presence. It turns out it's not a hostage. It's the leader of this little group of Flag Smashers, the one who handed out masks before the bank heist in Switzerland in Episode 1. Turns out she's got super strength, and some of the other ones do too, obviously, and maybe more, since she's able to grab Red Wing out of the air and break it over her knee. So she's got super strength, super reflexes, you know, basically she's got some of the powers that Captain America had. The trailers had a little bit of this scene. You know, we saw them fighting on the trucks, but it definitely left out the part where John Walker swoops in. The new Captain America comes in via helicopter, and he brings his buddy and a gun and a little recklessness with him. He uses a gun in the fight, even shooting right near his buddy. But, I mean, obviously he's a good shot. He's throwing his shield around, you know, with not really much care who he hits. Now, how did he know this was going to happen? How did he know to be there? Well, we'll soon get an answer, but both Falcon and the Winter Soldier end up getting knocked off the truck, and their pursuit ends.
Could have used that shield.
Get off of me!
Soon, Sam and Bucky are walking the German countryside through farmland, teasing each other, talking about how the vaccine that was labeled in the trucks is much more likely super serum, and now they say they have at least 8 new super soldiers. Falcon is a little naive here. He's not understanding. Bruce Banner was working on this stuff. Emil Blonsky got a little of it and became Abomination, and he had to know that other people wanted what Cap had, and would work on something, even if he wasn't, you know, definitely sure that they were doing that. He had to think that somebody somewhere was working on this. At any rate, their walk is interrupted by Walker and his buddy, who are driving a Jeep, or riding in a Jeep, And after some convincing, they get Sam and Bucky to get in. During that ride, Walker seems to be making a good case for teaming up. They name drop the GRC, which is the Global Repatriation Council. That's helping people get integrated back into society that they were lost in the first Thanos snap, the blip. It seems like Walker and Hoskins mean well. His buddy is Lamar Hoskins. But while these guys are supposed to be battle-hardened, it comes off more like they're just playing soldier, you know. And it's when Hoskins calls himself Battlestar that Bucky's like, I've heard enough. Like, stop the truck. I'm getting out.
I'm Battlestar, John Spartan.
Battlestar? Stop the car!
He and Sam have seen true battle. Nobody probably in the car more so than Bucky. I mean, he was in World War II and then ostensibly got killed, but then brought back to life with the super soldier serum, I guess, or recovered with the super soldier serum and turned into a monster as the Winter Soldier and thawed and frozen over and over again over the years. And now he just fought in Endgame. I mean, this guy has seen a lot. And then these two guys, no matter what their resume says, we haven't heard of them because they're not fighting the fights that Sam and Bucky have fought. Walker tries to convince Sam that he's doing things for the right reasons, though. And then he says something dumb.
It'd be a whole lot easier if I had Cap's wingman on my side.
It's always that last line.
So after Sam and Bucky leave, we get a little scene where the Flag Smashers head to a hideout. A German man and his wife set up a safe house, and he's excited that these celebrities have shown up looking for a place to stay. He shows them the secret space he set up, and they've got computers to do some internet work to help them disappear, clean themselves off the internet, their aliases, and the man showing them around calls Carly a sort of Robin Hood. And that's when Carly Morgenthau, the girl playing Carly Morgenthau, played Enfys Nest in Solo, a Star Wars story. Well, that character gets a text from an unknown private number. It says, "You took what was mine. I'm going to find you and kill you." So this immediately tells us she's not as in charge as she seems to me. She's not just on the run from people like John Walker and the U.S. government, but from someone she stole something from, most likely, that quote-unquote vaccine, the serum. Her group seems very committed to her ideals, though.
One world.
One people.
One world.
One people.
One world.
One people.
Sam and Bucky are on the plane stateside, and Bucky, after having met Walker, is even more upset that Sam gave up the shield. He wants to steal it back. But Sam reminds him that Sharon Carter was branded an enemy of the state when she stole it for him and Steve Rogers, stole the uniform and shield and his gear. And he and Steve ended up going on the run for 2 years. He says he doesn't want any of that anymore. Bucky is focused, though, on the super soldiers and decides it's time to reveal a secret to Sam. So he takes him to Baltimore. While walking the street, a couple of kids spot Falcon and they're excited. They call him Black Falcon. And that's a funny scene where he points out, no, it's just Falcon. But there are members of the black community that are proud of him being a hero, and they don't want people to gloss over the fact that he's black. So even though it's kind of played for laughs, it's kind of important that Sam has this recognition that the kids are looking at him as Black Falcon, but he, just wants to be his own man. He just wants to be Falcon. It's still important to this community. They don't see Nick Fury. Rhodey's hidden behind armor. Black Panther fights in the suit as well, and he's not from America. We haven't seen characters like Blade, Luke Cage, Storm, and Monica Rambeau just got her powers a few months back, so she hasn't made a debut on the world stage. So Falcon, to them, is the front and center black superhero right now. When you run down the names and you don't count aliens or anything, just humans from Earth, you see just how much work this world needs to do, real world and the one that Marvel Studios has created. So in Baltimore, they get to a house. Based on the credits, the door is answered by a young Avenger, Elijah Bradley. Now, he's not a young Avenger now, but someday he will be. And whether or not he's got his powers now, we're not really 100% sure. The boy is protecting his grandfather from harassment. But Bucky drops a line he thinks will get them inside, and it works. Isaiah is not happy to see Bucky. The line was about a fight the two had in Korea during the Korean War, and apparently Isaiah has the super soldier serum in his veins because not only did he go toe-to-toe with the Winter Soldier when he was a brainwashed pawn of Hydra, but Bradley took off part of Bucky's metal arm at the time.
We heard whispers he was on the peninsula, but everyone they sent after him never came back. So the U.S. military dropped me behind the line to go deal with him. I took half that metal arm in that fight in Goyang, but I see he's managed to grow it back.
Isaiah doesn't want to help them. Instead of being a hero, the U.S. military put him in a cell, ran tests on him, took his blood. You know, he may have been a success as a super soldier, but he was in prison for 30 years, basically. So probably they wanted to try and make more people like him. Bruce Banner's experience may be directly tied to this guy, even if he didn't know it, or, you know, Bruce Banner or him. Sam's angry with Bucky when they get kicked out of the house, asking why he never knew about this, and if Steve knew. Bucky says Steve Rogers did not know, and he didn't tell him. The police show up. Two guys yelling at each other walking down the middle street. I guess they were driving by. You can kind of see them drive up to the corner of the intersection when they're walking down the street. Now, this is a heavy-handed attempt by the writer and the show to show us racial profiling. I think it's definitely the weakest and worst scene of the show so far. You know, we just had a very good representation of how poorly black people are treated 10 seconds ago with Isaiah Bradley. I mean, it was very implicit, explicit, whatever you want to say. This one was unnecessary, didn't make any sense at all. The only real purpose is for them to take Bucky into custody after they run their names. It's for a warrant for failure to appear for required therapy with Dr. Rayner as a condition of his pardon.
It's like missing a check-in with your PO. I'm sorry, Mr. Barnes, you're under arrest.
We get to the prison, and Bucky didn't spend too much time inside. He's being released. Dr. Rayner approaches Sam in the waiting room, and he thanks her for helping him get him out, but she says it wasn't her, and John Walker is there, and Sam can't believe it. It seems that Rayner and Walker did some field ops years ago, and Walker says he stepped in when he found out that they were working together, Rayner and Bucky. And now he says he's decided Bucky no longer needs to go to therapy and that he is the authority. Why? Just because. Apparently, he has that much clout with Congress or whoever it is that's in charge of this therapy session. Maybe he's got ties to those senators he mentioned at the beginning of the show that he had so many meetings with. Maybe those senators were some of the ones that Bucky was, you know, helping to put into power back when he was in Hydra. Well, Rayner is not pleased, but she summons Bucky and Sam to a condition of release therapy session.
James, condition of your release session now. You too, Sam.
No, it's okay. I'll be out here with my...
That wasn't a request.
It very much plays awkward how Rayner treats these two heroes. She's really treating these guys like a married couple. She goes so far as to literally use a married couple therapy technique, and she also has them sit ridiculously, intimately close. There actually is a breakthrough, though, which comes too easy, if you ask me. If you think about how much of a hard time Bucky has been giving the doc, this just is way out of left field.
Steve believed in you. He trusted you. He gave you that shield for a reason. That shield, that is everything he stood for. That is his legacy. He gave you that shield and you threw it away like it was nothing. Oh, so maybe he was wrong about you. And if he was wrong about you, then he was wrong about me.
The show's strength is the action. The weakness, definitely apparent if you ask me. It's still enjoyable, don't get me wrong. But there's not a lot of time for character depth, so that's either a fault of Disney's management not insisting on more episodes or whatever it is that's taking to get these things made. It just comes way too fast. Sam agrees to squash the arguments, go their separate ways after the mission, and both leave the session. Again, just all of this is just way too convenient. So much so that, you know, there's a level of suspension of disbelief, but when you have all these things on top of each other, it's just too much for me. It draws me out of the episode. So once they're outside, they re-encounter John Walker, and he wants them to team up again. Sam points out that he's got a bureaucracy and approvals to get, while he and Bucky are free agents, so it doesn't make much sense for them to, you know, team up. And that's when Walker says a very un-Captain America-like phrase.
A word of advice, then.
Stay the hell out of my way.
The Flag Smashers, they've left the secret hideout, and they're loading a plane, I guess in Germany, with the crates labeled vaccine, but they're most assuredly containing super serum. Cars are approaching. One of Crawley's henchmen says he'll buy them time, and he sacrifices himself to the cause. He knocks over a telephone pole and then runs at people with guns. It seems like either that was the extent of his strength, like, I can just tip over this telephone pole. I mean, it seemed like he could have done something more to hold him off. He just runs out and gets gunned down. But anyway, they get away. The plane is able to take off, and the Power Broker's men are left with just one dead Flag Smasher.
Okay, then.
Meanwhile, Bucky and Sam just left the police precinct, and now they're left to figure out how to get more information on the Flag Smashers. Because at this point, all they have is what they've experienced. They don't know about the Power Broker. They don't know that there are other entities involved. And they do know that Captain America has been keeping his eye on them. Well, if you want to call John Walker that. Bucky comes up with a plan to ask someone familiar with Hydra. So now he's the man with the plan. And they decide they're going to go see the guy in Civil War that stirred up trouble between the Avengers. But if you remember, he hated superpowered people, going so far as to assassinate the other Hydra Winter Soldiers in cold storage in Siberia in that movie.
We're going to go see Zemo.
We are two episodes in now, two-thirds of the show left. Zemo's not going to be the big bad here, at least yet, and it would be quite a stretch to suddenly turn him into the bad guy since he's established as being in prison. Sam and Bucky are having a weird relationship here, and it's not really well done in this show, but there's limited time, I understand. Whose fault is it? It's not the viewers. People are always happier when there's not a lot of fat to cut around a show. You know, lots of unnecessary scenes and setups, and they don't do shows any favor, but there's not enough time here. We need more time with these characters. We need more episodes. It needs more. And if that's the situation, you release more at a time then. You make more and release more, or drop the whole season at once if you're afraid people won't stick with it. There is such a thing as too much setup. But most of what we're seeing here is just out of left field. It's way too jarring. We need to spend a little bit more time to understand why there's this animosity, not just setting up that there is, and then only one line just suddenly reveals it. It's almost too healthy for Bucky to be doing what he's doing and needing therapy. He wouldn't be this well adjusted if he needed therapy. We're supposed to believe this is keeping him up nights, giving him nightmares. That he doesn't have the ability or desire to make friends, but he's so well adjusted that he can just make good judgments on Yuri, interact in a healthy and respectful way to Leah. But still, he has this big unresolved issue with Sam, who, even if he didn't like him, was like a brother to his friend Steve. So, you know, so much so, it bothered him when he didn't take up the mantle. Bothered him more when some other guy tried to insinuate he was like a brother. You know, remember Walker's line in the GMA interview? The show's not doing a very good job. And there's four episodes left, they can pull it together, but it seems like action's going to be the way to go here. We see race is playing a factor in this Captain America situation. It's why we went to Baltimore, why we were introduced to Isaiah. It's why we saw the racial profiling with two white cops. Now, Sam is hurt by having this kept from him, and I'm left with the feeling that if he had this type of information beforehand, he might have taken up the job as the new Cap, but it's not really anyone's fault. If what Bucky says is true, you can't blame Bucky, because he couldn't have known this might have been the thing that kept the shield with Sam. You can't blame Steve, because Steve didn't know. You can't blame other Avengers, because it wasn't important until Steve left, and that was a surprise. The world has had other problems to deal with. We hear about the GRC dealing with repatriation, and the resettling people who were treated as dead. We just don't have time for this little social commentary by Disney. We hear about Agent 13, Sharon Carter. So she may appear before or around the same time that Zemo does. We know they're going to go see him. And we know that he's been stuck in jail. And we'll find out if he's been there the whole time or if he was dusted and then came back. You know, that would be really cruel to him. Dusted and then comes back and he's in the same cell. We see Carly Morgenthau, and I'm not sure if we see the Power Broker or just his henchmen. I've been talking to friends, and while WandaVision felt like a show that really benefits from a weekly release schedule, this show seems more like a bulk drop and binge type of show. You know, there's not a lot of mystery. It's just introduce new character. Hey, here's a new character. Hey, here's an old character. Very little mystery. The suspense is all related to if and when Sam is going to take up the shield and how that happens. You know, that's still the mystery here. The addition of the Power Broker is a nice touch, but it's not as if there's a breadcrumb trail or a secret identity that we should expect to have already known this person. Now, if it's actually Thunderbolt Ross, that's great. But there haven't been clues. It would just be, you know, a shocking twist. And I still feel that John Walker is going to be made out to be unworthy. He's dabbling in that unworthiness with the way he's presenting himself to us. And the line about staying out of his way, you know, he seems to be a company man. You know, of the U.S. government. Great for them. But remember, Captain America, the real one, Steve Rogers, actually went on the run because of his moral and ethical commitments. John Walker just seems to be like the kind of guy to cut corners. And if he doesn't already have super serum powers, you know, I think maybe when there was that line about him being studied at MIT, maybe, just maybe, he got a little bit. Maybe that's where the Power Broker was at MIT. Then maybe he's going to want some of the Flag Smasher serum for himself to make him truly over-the-top super. And maybe that's his character arc and where we're going to leave him. Getting superpowered, but maybe losing the mantle of Captain America or giving it up in order to get those powers. And we saw a glimpse of Isaiah's grandson, Elijah, who I believe in the comics is part of the Young Avengers as Patriot, which if we're keeping track, we've seen three now and are slated to see more. The first we saw were Wanda and Vision's kids, Speed and Wiccan, Billy and Tommy in WandaVision. And there are two more coming in the future with more Disney Plus shows. I think Ant-Man's daughter and then Kate Bishop, who's going to take on the mantle of Hawkeye. I'm going to guess that we're going to see Sharon Carter early in the next episode as they head to Zemo and then meet Zemo and perhaps either break him out or leave him in jail where someone else breaks him out. And then that would leave three episodes to set up the chase, the confrontation, and then a battle and an epilogue, which we probably need setting up the next show, which is Loki's, starting June 11th, which means unless they air two episodes in a week a couple of times, it's actually going to go beyond the release date for the Black Widow movie, which is slated for July 9th. So none of these shows may tie into that Black Widow movie. Some of them might. Or if Loki ends up releasing more than one a week at times from June 11th on, maybe we will see all of these shows tied together with Black Widow. The mystery for me really still is how all these shows are going to tie together. What do you think, though? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4. Episode 2, as well as all the episodes, are going to be directed by Kerry Skoglund. And the writer for this one, The Star-Spangled Man, is Michael Kastelein. Episode 3 is going to air April 2nd, and the final episode is set to air April 23rd. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 2 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.